Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Simon Phipps. Episode 194 for December 14th, 2011. MySQL and MariaDB. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Ford, featuring available voice-activated sync with sync services, which enables you to customize your driving experience with personalized news, traffic, and directions. Check it out in the new 2012 Ford Focus and at Ford.com/technology. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, Libre, open-source software. I'm your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Stonehenge.com. If you're watching the video, you may notice that my face is getting fuzzier. It's not the camera doing bad effects. It's actually my beard. 22 days now in the counting. I'm growing it since I turned 50, and I'm going to keep growing it for at least another couple weeks. I may shave it off after that, though, but I'm actually getting some compliments on it, so I'm pretty happy with it so far, and it hasn't itched as much as I thought it would be. So we'll see. This may be my new look. You'll never notice. We'll just find out when we get there. The show's not about me, although I'm in a lot of the shows. The show is also about other people, like our co-host, Simon Phipps. Simon, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you, Randall. I'm a little bit worried by how people are going to tell you and I apart now, because up until now, they've been using the beard as the distinguishing point. But I'm now, sure. You know, they're going to have to go by shirt color now, I think, or something like that. I don't know what we're going to do.
We'll figure something out. Maybe accent, because my British accent is nowhere near yours. So
my American accent is just lousy.
So if you're listening to the show and you want to tell us apart, even though we both have beards now, that's how you're going to do it. That's how it's going to go. And I've got to say, I'm a little giddy about today's show. This is a show I've been trying to put together for a really long time. We have none other than Michael Wydenius, who you may know as Monty, the creator of MySQL and the follow-on product, MariaDB. MySQL, I'm sure if you're listening to the show, you probably have used MySQL directly. If not, you've probably hit a website in the last 15 minutes that uses MySQL somewhere. It is the number one open source database everywhere, and everybody uses it. And Monty created it. Monty's still the main programmer for it, and I'm very, very excited to bring him on the show. This is I've been looking forward to this a long time. Simon, any comments?
Well, I've known Monty for quite a long time because, of course, we used to work together at Sun after Sun acquired MySQL, and I also worked with Monty on the Stop Software Patents campaign in Europe back in 2005. So we've been meeting each other and drinking vodka together for quite some time now. But it's really great to finally get him on the show. He's been on your list for ages, and congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. It was a lot of work. I definitely had to send a lot of email messages to get this thing to happen. So I'm looking forward to it. But before we bring Monty on, I have a very important message for you, because this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Ford, featuring available voice-activated sync with sync services, including personalized view, news, traffic, and directions. Sync services enables you to personalize your driving experience. So whenever you get in your car, you can always have access to the information you want, such as personalized alerts for weather, sports, news, stocks, and even horoscopes, and personalized traffic alerts on frequently traveled routes. The updates are delivered to you via an available in-dash display or read to you as you drive, or sent to your mobile device via SMS. And sync users can personalize their account with the information they want at the Ford website, ford.com/sync. Ford Sync with Sync Services, personalized traffic and information services are available in the 2012 Ford Focus. You can learn about this and other technologies Ford is bringing to its vehicles at ford.com/technology. And having said that, let's go ahead and bring on our very special guest, Monty. Welcome.
Thank you.
Yes. So in the brief introduction to the beginning of the show, I gave sort of my overview of what I believe MySQL and MariaDB are. But let's go ahead and hear your version of just like the 30,000-foot view. What is MySQL? What is MariaDB? And why would people be using that?
MySQL is the most used open-source database.
Okay, that's a really brief definition. I'm expecting a little bit more.
Yeah, but I mean, it's enough for people to know that it's free, and 80 to 90% of the websites are using it. So basically, anybody who's using the net is using MySQL.
Okay, good. That's a little better then. Yeah. Go ahead.
And MariaDB is made by the same team who did MySQL. Is something that's binary compatible. It's basically seconds to replace MySQL. And the reason we are doing is to ensure that this product remains free, whatever Oracle would do, who is now owning the corporate MySQL. And a couple of months ago, Oracle kind of showed that we were on the right track because they changed MySQL from being a free product to be an open core product, which means that some part of it's free, but if you want to have the, some of the newest features, you basically have to pay for it.
Let's dial it back a little ways. When did MySQL start, and what drove you to write the software in the first place?
The original code is tracked back to 1982, mm-hmm. and that was a database I wrote for being able to do projects for my clients. And in 1994, I decided to write an SQL interface on it to make it more usable in the web. So it has a long track record, but the whole time the intention was something that would solve my own problems. And when I had the SQL ready, me and David Duxmark and Alan Larson, the three founders, thought that this is actually something useful we could release as open source. And as we were open source believer even back then, even this was before open source was known, or being coined, we thought that this is something that is good to give out. And we did give it out as a under really free license, but still enough hooks so that if you wanted to run something complex and commercial on it, and you didn't want to be open source, in that case you had to kick a little bit back to us. And the intention was that 1 in 1,000 maybe have to pay, but not more. We wanted something that would spread to everyone, and we were quite successful in doing that.
What was the landscape like back then? What other databases were available to you that you had a choice of using instead of writing your own?
For web, basically nothing. I mean, there were MySQL that was kind of free, but not really. And this was before Postgres had SQL. There's Sybase and Oracle, of course, existed, but they were not really usable for the web because it was never tuned for that kind of environment. So we wanted to actually tried using Sybase, but it was not just good enough. So that was the reason I wrote the SQL interface on top of my project instead of exporting data back and forth to Sybase. This is also, Linux has been only around a couple of years. I did the original development on Solaris, and the internet was just about starting, at least in Scandinavia. Not many had internet back then.
The name MySQL actually comes from something very personal to you. What's the origin of the name?
So my oldest daughter, first daughter, is named My, which is spelled M-Y, and we thought that was a kind of a good name for database, and SQL came from the language that we are using.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah.
And it also ties into
your next yes. question, MariaDB, comes from my youngest daughter, Maria. And we Very did good. Also have a product called MaxDB or MySQL Max, which was another product that was named by my son Max. So all my children has given a name to a product.
How does she feel about being this famous?
Both proud and also afraid that people will connect her to this thing because she likes to be in the shadows.
Is she a programmer too?
No.
Oh, well,
she is now traveling in Latin America, and actually she's now in America, but she has been traveling all around the world for 1 year now and looking around before going to college.
Very good, very good. And so MySQL, you put it out under a liberal license so that people could use it for personal projects. And then you said something about a commercial license if they wanted to do something more advanced with it. And you also said go ahead.
Yep. Okay, sorry. So the idea was that this was before open source. So the first license we had said that if you make money on it, you should contact us and get a license. But and on Windows, we had the shareware version just because Windows was so much, took so much more time to keep updated. And I was a more Solaris Linux guy than a Windows guy. But we then did, around 99, we changed to be GPL. And the idea was that if you are free, then GPL allows you to freely use it. But if you want to use MySQL in a commercial closed source program connected to and distributed to somebody else, and you didn't want to be open source, in that case, you could get exactly the same code under a commercial license. You could do the distributions. And these companies who did buy licenses, they paid for half the development cost of MySQL. Though they part of the cost we got by selling support. And I think still that is one of the better models in open source, so that you can afford to spend all your time developing software and not do part-time consulting that basically distracts you from developing the product.
So just how effective was that as a model for doing business, Monty? Did you find that there were a lot of people who chose to buy a license rather than accept the terms of the GPL, or did you find that most people who came to you as a company actually wanted to get support from you?
So, as I said earlier, we quickly find out that 1 in 1,000 roughly is prepared to pay. Some of those actually paid even if they didn't want to, need to, just because they wanted to support us. And some took support support contracts. Some of those needed, some didn't. But it was quite efficient. So we were 2 guys at the start. After 2 months, we were profitable, so we could continue doing this full time. And then we did grow to 15 persons just by profit until in 2001. Took in investment. And with some investment, basically using the same thing, we grew to revenue of about $70 million, half support, half licenses, before we were sold to Sun for $1 billion. And I think that kind of proved that we were extremely successful for being an open source project.
I agree with that. The thing I really want to get at, though, is lots of people have since then copied what you did or tried to copy what you do. You know, the MySQL model is famous as one of the ways that people try to run open source projects. And yet, when I've had conversations with you before, you've suggested to me that most of the people who came and bought subscriptions from MySQL wanted the value of the subscription. It wasn't that they were afraid of the GPL and needed scaring into buying it. It was that they saw value and paid for the value.
Exactly. That's 100% correct.
So would you do it the same way today? If you were starting a business today, would you try the same model or would you go a different way?
Depending on your product. If your product is an end-user product where there's no way to embed it, in that case, this model doesn't work. And you need to look at either a business source or open core or something similar, or just do support. But if you have an infrastructure project, that's something that you need to embed in your application, like a library or something else, and there's lots of users for it, then this is the perfect way to do it. But there's not that many projects that are infrastructure projects.
So now you say you took investment back at the beginning of the last decade. Did that change the way that you related with the code and with your community, or what were the consequences of taking investment from an open source point of view?
it just enable us to hire some 10 people that year, and the development organization, which did a lot more than just MySQL, but almost everything was open source, grew to about 100 people. So, and we couldn't have done that without investment. And I think that gave back a lot to open source. And we couldn't take MySQL to the next level without the investment. We did also do the MySQL monitor, but that was closed source. I really fight for that not to happening, but the people in charge at that point in time decided that we needed a differentiator. But during MySQL time, that did not pay off. The cost of developing that and keeping that was much more than we ever got for it. So I think that was a mistake. We should just concentrate to do everything open source.
Right. So now, going on from there, what was it that made you feel you needed to sell MySQL to Sun?
The thing is that when you get investors, you get them on a deal that they can sell the company. So the decision happens when you sign the shareholders agreement, which was in 2001. And in that case, after that, the only thing we could do is try to help to find a good buyer. So we did have some influence, but we couldn't stop it from getting sold. I mean, that was the cost of getting a better product. And we thought that either we need to change the landscape or databases or not do it at all. So it was not much a choice if you want to grow. And I thought that Sun was the perfect buyer. I couldn't have counted on Sun getting sold within 1 year.
Yes, well, so I should disclose at that point that I was part of the due diligence team at Sun that evaluated MySQL just before the purchase, so I've got to watch what I say about it. Coming up to that sale to Sun, did you change the way that MySQL worked as a business to get it ready to sell? Did you make any changes once your investors came to the point they wanted to sell?
In the server, no, because I did have a shareholders agreement that ensured that everything we would do on the server would be open source. So I kind of took care of that. So basically, nothing in the code. We did have a problem that Oracle had bought in a DB, and we needed a replacement. So we were working on three different strategies to find a replacement for that. And that was kind of important from business point of view, to be able to either go to the market or sell it. So we did work with PBXT and Solid as external storage engine that had the potential. We did also work internally on Falcon, which is something we bought, and on the area storage engine that also was a possible replacement. And that was something that Sun saw as very important, that we had a solution for getting rid of InnoDB.
Which was partly because Oracle owned InnoDB, and so you were a hostage to your chief competitor because of that purchase.
Yes, and at that point in time, Sun didn't really go well along with Oracle. So they really needed something to replace that component.
Right. So now, after the transaction took place and MySQL belonged to Sun, how did life go for you inside Sun Microsystems?
I left 1 month earlier on good terms with Sun to actually start working on with a team on the area storage engine that was supposed to replace InnoDB. But of course, when the Oracle purchase were announced, we did understand that just replacing InnoDB, that was the secondary thing. The more important thing was to save MySQL for the future. And we are now 20 people, most people from the original MySQL core team. We are basically have the people who have the most knowledge of MySQL anywhere. And we all believe that Oracle is not the best place for MySQL. And that's why we are working on a replacement, which is superior to MySQL on our most practical points.
Right. So now, when you left Oracle, or you left Sun, you started a company called Monty Program AB. Could you just say a few words about, you know, what your philosophy was behind Monty Program AB? Because it isn't just a copy of what you did with MySQL AB, is it?
No. So, I mean, in the sense that the original company that did MySQL from the start was called Monty Program AB. And the name was free, so I just kind of copied the old name. That I thought that was a little bit amusing. But the difference with MySQL is that MySQL tried to do everything. And that was kind of what happens when you took in investors. That it was more important to take all the important business yourself than to feed things to your partners, because the management wanted the money to stay within MySQL. With Monty Program AB, we are doing things totally different. We are the driver of MariaDB, which is a true open source project. They are also the people are developing on, but all our people, we only focus on doing the hard development on MariaDB, and how we get paid for doing that is people buying features for either MariaDB or MySQL. We can do features to both, but also there's lots of companies where SkySQL is the front runner doing support on MySQL and MariaDB, and we're doing back support for them, because we have a team who can fix anything and add anything to these products. So that's kind of how we do money. So the big difference is that we only do one thing, we do very well, and we don't compete with partners. And everything we do is open source.
Right. Now, and I think that's very important to understand what you're doing there, because I think you've got a great model there, which is that you've got Monty Program AB just doing technical work, and then you have relationships with companies like SkySQL, whose role in life is to interact with customers, do marketing, and be the go-to-market part. And that distinction between your business and SkySQL's business, I think, is a very interesting new model for open source that you've pioneered there.
And the other thing also what we are doing is that we are not creating a company who is to be sold. I mean, we got sold once, it didn't work out, so we're not looking for investment in the other, in the normal sense. Our plan is to get some companies behind us to help us create a foundation, like Apache Foundation or Linux Foundation, but in such a way that we can continue doing exactly what we do now, and all the money that we generate is just going to pay the guys who are doing that. And that setup would enable us to, after the initial investment, basically produce code for MariaDB forever for everyone. And create something that is sustainable.
So you mentioned there that you made quite a bit of money, I think, if it's not impolite to mention it, from the sale of MySQL. What have you done with that money?
A big part on it is actually put into saving MariaDB. So I'm heavily invested in that, basically put several millions on this, just to ensure that we can do what we are doing. We are now finally profitable, but still we need more money to grow, so we are putting in some more money. But things are going good in that sense. The other part where I put my money is actually creating an investment company where we are investing into companies who are doing products around large communities, so we can actually we can use the knowledge we got when creating MySQL, the company, and help them get similar success stories done. And the rest of the money I put on building a nice house for myself. That's about it.
You know, I think that's a great thing to do. And one of the things I love about looking at the history of MySQL is to see the fact that you've actually made a huge success out of working with open source software and with community. So when I hear people saying how you know, open source is all about volunteers and that there's no money in it, I then think about you. I mean, you're still living in the same sort of area where you grew up in Finland, aren't you, Monty?
Exactly. I'm doing the same thing. I'm even if leading Monte Carlo AB, I'm still developing some 4 hours at least per day. And then I'm going out and talking about MariaDB and open source. That's
so, you know, I think it's a great example there that any of the people who are watching or listening to the show today could find themselves in your position, you know, of being living in the same area where you grew up, doing what you love, and making a huge success out of it commercially. Do you have any hints and tips that you would give people who are slaving away on an open source project now about how they can end up making good?
Well, the first tip I can give you that I there's basically one rule I followed when creating MySQL, because I didn't know how to drive an open source project back then. The simple rule is that treat people like you would be treated if you would be in their shoes, and try to help everyone, because if you do, they will either help you or somebody else. And
you know, go ahead.
That has worked very well.
You know, I'm sort of curious, since you started your life, or at least the life that I know about what you had as a programmer, what was the transition like as MySQL took off with leaps and bounds? Were you still spending most of your time programming, or did you now have to be a team manager? And was that something that you had planned on originally and trained for, or is this all just sort of as it came along?
I tried to not be a team manager because I do have some skills proven in programming. And why would you go away for something that you don't like to do and you have some skills? So I always try to hire self-driven people who can be doing work just by giving them a direction. And eventually we had managers, but those was hired. I mean, I do lead my team, but I expect them to be able to work either in groups or by themselves.
Do you still find today that you're sitting down occasionally and hacking out lines of C code, or is that all behind you now?
As I said, I'm doing 4 hours programming per day average.
Wow, okay. So you're still a hands-on good guy that way. So
I mean, we have a channel, Maria, on Freenode. You will always find me there helping people, doing quick hacks if they have a problem.
Now, I understand you have some cooperation with the LibreOffice. Are you working on something there?
Yes, I mean, they want to ensure that they have a good database behind them, and we are committed to ensure that the connection that they have to MySQL will be kept up, improved on, and they will have a database that is more developed, or at least you take LibreOffice needs in consideration when you do development. So the idea is that if they have a problem, they will tell us and we will fix it. I mean, that's our contribution to LibreOffice.
Okay, cool. MySQL, you know, you said you started out with a couple of programmers and you hired a bunch more programmers. How much of MySQL was community contribution and how much of it was done just by your team?
I would say that 60% of the code of MySQL is still my handwriting. Somebody may have done some comments or adding out, but it is true code. Still comes a large part from me. It was a complex project from the start. So in the server, we didn't get that many contributions. There were lots of ideas that we implemented. And of course, we did have some contributions from people that we then promptly hired because they were doing the contributions to prove themselves. And then they asked for a job, and if the contribution was good, we hired them. So on the server, let's say 1% or less is contributions. Of course, there's then some storage engine like PBXT, which is a large contribution per se, but that's a little bit beside the server. But the big contributions come from people helping us getting MySQL to work everywhere. So I did the C connector and the first version of the Perl connector And then we had people in the community helping us with PHP, Ruby, COBOL, anything. And we could never have done that ourselves.
Okay, so you did have some big, some at least medium contributions from outside.
Yes.
Were the contributions ever in a direction that you didn't like and you had to reject them?
For code that was given to us to the server, mostly I wrote those or rewrote those, me or somebody else, just because people did mostly quick hacks and they didn't know the code and could reuse other parts of the code. So I would say that if I get a patch, let's say 100 lines, I would say that 40 would be rewritten, 30 would be removed, and then other ones would be improved. That's kind of the typical thing.
I might have my facts off a little bit, but did Google try to contribute a bunch of code to MySQL that was rejected?
This was contributed by Google around, let's see, 2006, a little bit before Sun. But then we had a management team who didn't want to take it. They wanted Google to pay for it. I tried to tell them, this is silly, we can get free code. But they were so focused on getting even more revenue just before going public or getting sold. Because any revenue you get, that would hugely increase the value of the company. And that was just stupid.
Okay. And what's the relationship between MySQL and Percona?
Sorry, could you repeat?
Yeah, what's the relationship between MySQL and Percona?
Okay, MySQL and Percona. So MySQL from Oracle. So Percona is a company who is doing ExtraDB and the Percona server. They're quite good, but their goal is to be a better MySQL from Oracle. So they're totally depending on Oracle for all development, new features, and they are a small patch set that should be so little intrusive as possible to MySQL so that nobody would ever have a problem with them. And they're doing a reasonable good job with that. The difference with MonteProgram and Percona is that we are taking over the development of MySQL with MariaDB. We are doing new features, exciting things, and new optimizations. So we are some 20-man year in front of MySQL. And we are not afraid to doing big changes if needed. And we can do that because the people who originally designed the code is working for us.
Now, on just to keep talking about forks of MySQL, on about a year ago, maybe 2 years ago, at OSCON, I interviewed, I forgot his name, about Drizzle. Is Drizzle
about
still
Brian
around?
Brian Aker, probably.
Yeah, Brian Aker, yeah.
So Drizzle is a project to make MySQL smaller like it was 6-7 years ago. And the idea is small, little memory footprint, and for limited use, may have some benefits. Personally, I think that the computer is getting bigger, you have easier to have more memory. So they have some interesting ideas, and we try to borrow ideas from them and give them ideas. But I don't know of any serious employment of Drizzle, and it's definitely not MySQL anymore, even if you can use the MySQL protocol. You should have to see it more as something else that is not meant to replace MySQL. It's meant for something else, but they haven't been very clear of being able to define what is something else. And of course, there's no big company pushing for it anymore after Oracle fired all the Drizzle developers from Sun, from where they then went to let's see, another company. Lost the name for a second. But they were then, most of them went to another company, stayed there for almost 1 year, and then they did the first release, and then they spread like the wind. So there's no big development focus on Drizzle anymore. There is some, but nothing that I see as really critical.
Wasn't that Rackspace they went to, Monty?
Yeah, Rackspace, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, I think Brian has just moved to HP as well, hasn't he?
Yes.
Yes, yes. So actually, the first time I remember meeting you, Monty, was back, I think it was around 2005, and it was to do with something political. It was to do with the Software Patent Directive, as I recall. You were helping MySQL to fund the No Software Patents activity. Is that right?
Yes, I did put some money into that from the money I got from Sun, actually. So I basically did a notable donations to it.
Right. So how do you feel about how that debate is going at the moment? Do you think we won, or do you think that we've still got a problem with software patents?
We definitely have a problem with software patents, both in Europe and U.S., and somebody needs to look at it and take patents to a new level. I've seen some discussions about doing that, but nobody seems really being serious on doing the right thing and just get rid of all silly patents that has no value that anybody can create at home.
So do you think you would get involved in a political action like that again, or do you think that was just a one-time activity for you?
No. I'm anything that is against patents, I'm willing to put time and money to help.
Right. How do you feel about the direction that software patents are taking in the computer industry at the moment? It seems to me that they are inhibiting innovation in the mobile industry. Is that also hitting you in the database industry?
Basically in all industries. I mean, software patents are stalling innovation for 20 years and actually scaring small companies from doing open source, because they are afraid that if they release things open source, somebody may look at the code and find out the patents. And that's a real issue.
Right. And then the other thing that, that of course, you did in Europe was you were behind the complaint against Oracle acquiring Sun. Did that work out the way you hoped it would?
So let's... it worked basically the other way, that a European Commission contacted us and asked, do we want to be involved, because they needed somebody to check the arguments. And we did that and also give them a lot more information. So we were active in that, but driven by the Commission and not by our own agenda. Of course, we did believe that the Commission was right until the end, when they made the wrong decision. And there's still a complaint going around in Europe that Commission acted on wrong grounds.
Wow, cool. Good that you were able to do that and help out. I have some technical questions about MariaDB. I understand you intended it as a drop-in replacement for the current existing MySQL. How compatible is it?
Let's say 90.99. So far, I think that one person of some 100,000 has reported a problem that we fixed. So we are really, really compatible. So we have MySQL 5.1, that was when we started. And we're actually doing merges with MySQL every month. So everything MySQL development that's happened in Oracle, we will get that in the next release. So we have also MySQL 5.2 and 5.3. All of those are drop-in replacement of MySQL 5.1. And then we have a MariaDB 5.5 that should be released this year. And that is a drop-in replacement for MySQL 5.5. And it just works. And people just tell us it works much better than MySQL ever did.
Now,
but of course, we had 20 years more development on it. And we look at all code that is produced by Oracle. We fix about 20% of the code, because they actually have done things wrong, because they lost all the good developers who can tell them that people how the code works. So even if Oracle is able to put good developers on MySQL, they can't produce code because they don't know how the code works. So we are fixing that.
Yeah, I was just going to ask about the relationship there. Do you have a good working relationship with the people who are still working on MySQL inside Oracle, or is that really at a distance now?
For the competent people who actually produce good code and still stay in Oracle, have a good relationship, they are friends. And the fact that they are still staying there doesn't affect how we feel about them. And of course, then you have upper management of Oracle, which is not that happy of what we are doing.
Yeah, I was going to ask. I mean, it sounds like it'd be a little like a little peeved that you've essentially forked the code and gone off in a parallel direction, because that's. But I'm sure the upper management isn't actually looking at selling MySQL at all, right? I mean, it's just something they happen to have in their portfolio, I would presume.
You mean Oracle? I mean,
Oracle.
Yeah, I mean, they may put MySQL on the market again just because it doesn't really fit their name. Mainstream product. Oracle wants to have a huge cash benefit of any product they do, and MySQL doesn't really produce any money. So why would they keep MySQL if they can get a 5x on development cost on a product, and MySQL is barely producing its own? And I said the reason, of course, that is that is the same reason why they wanted to buy Sun with MySQL, is that they saw that MySQL was starting to take over some Oracle installations, big customers, and they were afraid that that would happen in more increased manner. And that's why, as you can see from WikiLeaks, Oracle realized that if one of the main reasons to buy Sun was because of MySQL. And they made it clear that if MySQL would be not part of the deal, they would not buy Sun.
Mm, interesting, interesting. So how, you're saying that MySQL, MariaDB continues to track MySQL in terms of compatibility. How restrictive is that on what you're able to do with MariaDB? I mean, is it hampering you in areas?
Not really, because we are just enhancing it. I mean, you can easily add things like faster replication, microsecond support, no SQL, things like dynamic columns, without affecting compatibility at all. We have done really lots of enhancement in the optimizer, making subqueries usable. So if you do complex things with subqueries, MariaDB is 100 times faster than MySQL, easily. Mm. But all of those are behind switches, and you can turn things on and get faster speed. Of course, there's always a risk that something may get slower. But anything that is even a risk to may get slower, we put by an option, so you can't use that by default. So we have some more options because of the backward compatibility, but otherwise doesn't hamper us at all. There's so much things that we can do, enhancing things without affecting that.
Do you ever hope for the day that maybe Oracle will just abandon MySQL and then you can just go whatever direction you want with Maria and break backward compatibility, perhaps?
I mean, that's what they will do sooner or later. They already abandoned open source when it comes to developing MySQL by going to open core. And, I mean, from their point of view, the best thing that would happen is MySQL and then also Postgres would die. I'm sure that they are planning to do the same thing with Postgres as they know doing MySQL.
Wow!
And
okay.
After they have get both of those done, then they are the market leader. Together with MySQL, Oracle is already dominating some 80% of the market. I think they are very happy with it, but they would like to have 100.
And speaking of Postgres, what's your relationship with the Postgres guys? Are you friendly competitors, or you fiercely fight each other when you come to a conference together, or what?
Friends. I mean, the core developers, I can count almost everybody as a friend. I go to their parties. I usually bring black vodka to the parties so they can feel a little bit more Nordic. That's what we drink here. And we enjoy spending time together and actually also talk about features we have, how we implemented those, and give suggestions to the other party what they could do better and what we have learned. So I think at the upper development level, we are great friends. What is sad is there's lots of people in the open source community that is liking Postgres so much that they are bashing everything else, MySQL, everything else, and just promote Postgres. And that was, what I think, the biggest reason why Postgres didn't succeed, just because people were too nasty to others, while in the MySQL community, they have been friendly to everyone.
And I was going to ask about that. So I'm pretty sure most of the listeners of this show knew what MySQL was before we started the show. But I'm suspecting that a lot had never heard of MariaDB yet. And I'm wondering, do you feel you're getting the kind of marketing and market penetration with MariaDB that you would hope for?
The problem here is I did a way too good job with MySQL regarding the trademark. So it's really hard to replace a product when you search for MySQL or MySQL support and you find 100,000 links. So that people have a problem with MySQL, have a hard time even knowing about MariaDB, even if we are visiting all open source conferences, talking about MariaDB and getting people to know it. But the things are spreading. We have some 500,000 downloads of MariaDB, which is quite huge for an open source project. But of course, nothing compared to the 20 to 50 million users MySQL have. But still, we are getting there. And SkySQL has, within 1 year, managed to get some 150 top accounts of MySQL switching over to their support, just because they have a better support than Oracle has. And that's because the best support people left Oracle and joined Sky. So, and they're also promoting it. So we're slowly getting there. But it will still take 3 years, if not something dramatic happens, before people will know MariaDB as much as MySQL. But we are confident and we have time.
Cool. We actually have questions from the live chat room that we have for this show. And one of the questions was, any plans to work on high availability, load balancing, and to address NoSQL style things?
So NoSQL things we have already addressed by adding dynamic columns, which basically allows you to have a different set of columns for every row in the table. And that is one of the biggest features with NoSQL, that you can instantly add columns. We basically have the feature, not as nice, but still it's SQL and it's usable. High availability, we are working on a cluster that will be something that is a little more closer to rack, and that will give you high availability. And we hope to announce something about that next year. We are working with some partners on that.
And what about new storage engines?
New storage engine, that comes for the community. We are happy to add things that the community are willing to contribute, and we are looking at a couple ones, interesting ones that we want to add to MariaDB.
So back to the Oracle thing just for a second, because I'm curious, are there any patches that are coming from the Maria side making it back into Oracle's code base?
We have given them some patches, and we did that in the beginning. The problem was that, or the big problem is that Oracle doesn't understand how to work with the community. So we give them a patch for doing a pluggable authentication, but instead of telling us that, could you do these changes to the patch, they take the patch, modify it heavily, and add things that we don't think should be part of the patch. So that when we now merge things with MariaDB, we actually have more work to do because we help them. And that is not really the way you should do with open source. If somebody gives you code, you should treat them that they still own the code and work with them to maintain that and take that to the next version. And they don't understand that, so that's why people are not contributing any code to MySQL, because if you do, you have to work more.
It's nothing to do with a contributor. It's nothing to do with a contributor agreement at all, is it, Monty?
Nothing to do with it. This is just that they have no clue what it means to be a contributor, how a contributor work, and how to keep them engaged. They don't treat people the same way that they would like to be treated.
Right. So that question of contributor agreements is quite an old one. MySQL had a contributor agreement. I remember when you joined Sun, changing your contributor agreement into one that was a bit more rounded. How do you feel about contributor agreements? You know that I've come to the view that contributor agreements are bad for communities. How do you feel about them?
So far, we never had a single patch that was rejected or not given to us because of contributor agreements. People are quite willing to sign that as long as they don't give something away and they can still give that code to other open source projects. So in MySQL, originally, we had the contributor agreement that basically was shared copyright or BSD. MySQL, without me knowing, actually made a really bad contributor agreement that I then couldn't change when I got to know it, but basically said that you have to give the code to MySQL, who then license back. I would never give a code during such agreement. But the Sun one I liked. And we are using now something similar than the Sun one for our contributors. And we need that because sometimes we are still giving patches to Oracle, and if we don't have a contributor agreement, we can't give that to Oracle. And the other thing is also that there's people who have a commercial contract of MySQL, but they still like some of the patches that we are doing because we either own all our code or we have a contributor agreement to the code. We can actually give code to these projects. And that's quite nice. So we kind of need it. But the whole thing that, or the side of the argument, I have seen that it stops people giving code to you. I never, ever seen that for MySQL.
Okay. So going back actually to one of the answers you gave earlier, Monty, you hinted that you think that Oracle is trying to kill PostgreSQL. Do you believe that? And if you do, how are they going to do that?
I would say that if Postgres get any real market cap, of course they will. I mean, they as soon as MySQL got market cap, they did everything to kill MySQL. First it started with InnoDB. They thought we were killed. They didn't know how it is, what was it to add storage engines. And, I mean, you can easily see Larry Ellison talks when he... or just after he had bought InnoDB, where he proudly said that we own MySQL now. And when that didn't help, he had to buy Sun just to get MySQL. Why in earth wouldn't he try to do that with Postgres? If Postgres is not that hard to kill. You just have to remove the Postgres developers from the equation. I could easily come up with 5 ways to do that if I had a lot of money. And then the project is dead. And that's why it's so critical that we got all the good developers on MySQL to work on MariaDB, because if we wouldn't, we could never say MySQL.
Right. So for you, Monty Program is kind of a Noah's Ark for MySQL developers.
Exactly.
Right. So now there was one other question that came from the IRC that I wanted to ask you. One of the viewers on the IRC has said that they can't find MariaDB in the Ubuntu repositories. And the questioner asks whether you're doing work to get MariaDB included into Linux and BSD distributions.
So we are in FreeBSD. We are OpenSUSE, Gentoo. We are not in the large one in Ubuntu. And Red Hat, but we are working on both. And the reason is that we have something that can replace MySQL exactly. And that means that all file names, all ports are identical. Debian is not made for something that can replace something. A packet owns a file, and you can't have another packet own the same part. So that's totally political. You have all the packets for running MySQL on Red Hat or on Ubuntu. You can find them on our site. You can even find apt-get and things like that. So you can get those. But we're still working on with both Fedora and Debian to find a way to get a packet that can either replace MySQL or be a compatible one. But the problem is that if you do a compatible one, you also need to change the MySQL packet. And we are not allowed to do that because we don't own that.
It's a really fascinating problem.
Yes, so this is just a catch 22 that is totally political, then we have something that already works. So we are resolving that slowly. We have been working on this for 1 year. And sooner or later, we will find something that will satisfy everyone. But it's just a slow process. And this the disadvantage with working with a community that is so stuck with their own rules and they refuse to change them, even when it makes sense.
Have you looked at all at the way they handle Java on Debian? Because down there, they have a component in the repository whose role in life is to switch who the Java provider is going to be. Maybe you should investigate having some kind of an SQL switcher that allows people to switch in a different provider for the SQL service.
Yeah, but they do that by having modified the Java packet so it goes into a different place, and then you can just swap things with either symlinks or copying. That's my assumption. You can, that is kind of doable, but then you need to change both packets. If you only can change one, that's very, very hard to do, and that's our problem.
Well, I hope you solve that problem, because I'm really, you know, hearing in this conversation that, you know, Maria is really where people ought to be moving towards, especially when the development of MySQL is uncertain in the future. I know that I've been recommending it to my clients as a replacement for MySQL and every place that I can once I found out about it from you. So I hope you get that problem solved, because I think it'll really move the database world forward.
We are doing our best to do that. And we have lots of people helping us. So sooner or later, we will solve it.
We're almost out of time. I really have enjoyed having a conversation with you, Monty. I know I've chatted with you in person a few times and had a really fun time with that. Is there anything we've left out of what you want people to know about your projects, including MariaDB, that our audience should hear about?
The most interesting thing that was left out that... we're also working on a free documentation of everything related to MySQL and MariaDB, and that is askmonty.org, and that also includes most of the information that you ever want to have about MariaDB compatibility and such. So if people would like to help us with doing documentation of important open source projects, we are very thankful for anybody who wants to come and help. And also, that's the place where you should go to know how compatible is MySQL actually with the MariaDB and what all the features of MariaDB. Everything is there, very easy to find.
Very cool, very cool. Well, I don't know if you've listened to one of our shows in the past, but I tend to end the questions or end the conversation with a couple of quick poll questions. Favorite text editor, what's your favorite text editor, Emacs, VI, or something else?
Emacs.
Yay, yay. One for my side. Yay. Okay. And favorite scripting language?
Mostly use Perl. Sometimes Bash, but Perl is our favorite.
I knew there's a reason I liked it, Monty. I knew it because we're aligned on that one for sure. All right. Well, it's really been a pleasure having you on this show. I know we've been trying for, I think, almost 2 years to get you on the show, and I'm glad you finally made a chance in your busy schedule to take care of things. So thanks once again for being on Floss Weekly.
And thanks for inviting me.
Very good, very good. That was Michael Whitenius, who we mostly know as Monty, the inventor of MySQL and the continuing development under the MariaDB label. I was going to say, Monty, what do you think? No, it's Simon, what do you think?
It's always very interesting to talk to Monty about these things, because he's been doing open source as a business and as a lifestyle longer than most of us have even thought that open source or free software might be relevant to us. So he's got lots of experience to share there. I'm very interested in particular to hear his thoughts about competition from Oracle and from other corporations. Very concerning to hear him talking about the demise of MySQL and attacks on Postgres. What do you think about those, Randall? Do you think those are credible comments?
I'm a little curious about that, especially while I was talking about that. I don't know how you would actually kill Postgres. I mean, if you hired... He said he had five ways. He's just going to leave that secret, so we'll never know. But because you want to tell him how it's done. But you'd have to hire pretty much everybody who has expertise on Postgres in the core development community, and that'd be really expensive, I think, because those guys, there's a lot of distributed expertise about that, especially in other corporations already out there. So I don't know if you could kill Postgres. I don't know if it's possible, especially with the BSD licensing that also affects it a bit as well. But yeah, I was sort of curious about that too. It is interesting, you know, that we have a lot of people on this show that have turned their open source project, their love, their passion, whatever they're doing, into at least being commercially viable in the sense that they've got some cash. It's really nice to hear that there's also the super success stories where somebody like Monty can come along and make such a big difference in the world by having created this piece of software to scratch his own itch initially, and now it's something that is pervasive. I mean, I could count on one hand the number of people that are in that category, like Linus and a few of the others like that. Mm. So really interesting and a good parallel to how Linus did his work. Anything else on that before we move on?
Well, what's very reassuring, so I've been to visit Monty at home in Finland, and you know, Monty is your gaming hacker. You know, he loves his video games. He's got a great big DVD library. He hacks into the middle of the night. You know, you'll often find him on instant messaging or Skype at 4 o'clock in the morning. He's an unchanged geek hacker, despite having massive success, having been able to make a huge success out of MySQL several times. And he's still the same unchanged uber geek that he always was. So, it's encouraging to see you can succeed, but it's also encouraging to see that succeeding doesn't mean you have to become a bad person.
Well, if I ever have that kind of wild success, I promise I won't change at all. I'll still be me, so it'll be a lot of fun. So far, it doesn't look on the cards for me to be doing that, so I'm just a grunt working my way through life like everybody else is. And one other thing I should bring up is that I think on both of the most recent times I saw Monty in person, I consumed quite a bit of spirits, and he carries something with him, right? He carries like licorice vodka or something?
Yeah, there's this Finnish black vodka, which is a kind of a thick, sticky, slightly sweet licorice vodka, and Monty has always got a bottle of that with him. So if ever you see him at a conference, and you know, Monty is still the conference-going geek. You'll find him attending conferences large and small. He's always got a bottle of black vodka with him. And if you go for dinner with him, it's very likely there's going to be a round of vodka shots. So if you think you're going to meet him, it's good to get some practice in. I recommend it over the coming Christmas season for you, Randall.
I've had plenty of practice, so that's never the problem. But I do remember that there are times I haven't remembered fully meeting Monty. So a little bit crazy that way sometimes. Speaking of upcoming guests, because that's my awkward transition for the week. I love this. Next week is going to be the big Petaluma show. Yes, and yes, indeed. I am, in fact, going to Petaluma to visit the new brick house for the first time. And I'm going to be there. Aaron Newcomb's going to be there. And we have a guest flying in all the way from Europe just to be on the show. No, he's actually visiting some people in San Francisco. Peter Hinchins, the creator of ZeroMQ, one of these really advanced queuing systems. It's we mentioned a couple times in the SALT show a couple weeks ago. ZeroMQ has got some really clever things going on, but it's going to be me and Aaron Newcomb and Peter together in Petaluma. And I'm going to try to stick around all the rest of the day too there as well. So I'll be trying to like photobomb like every other show. I'm going to see if I can walk past behind the set or something of each of the other shows. So you might see me in some other shows that are taping next Wednesday as well. And I'll be in Petaluma the whole day. So if you're in Petaluma, tweet me and maybe we can hook up for lunch or something. So let me know. Following that, we've got Kleber Rosa. We just added a bunch of people for Q1, by the way. I've got some scheduling that came in. Kleber Rosa, we talked about him a couple times for Autotest, which is testing the Linux kernel and all the test contributor for that. Coming up first part of January, we've got Terry Gillett and Steve Song with the Village Telco project. That's the project to enable, basically remote phone systems using all open source software. Amazingly cool stuff. Very interesting to be able to talk to these guys. Sam Aaron's coming on to talk about Overtone, which is something I can't remember. Oh, it's a music editing system, if I remember right. Dave Scholes can talk to us about Remind, which is a some sort of a to-do list manager thing coming up. The only other one I've got on the schedule for Q1 so far is David Carver and Sastri Malati, who work with Tumeric, which is some stuff that was developed at eBay and open source there. Should be pretty interesting to go on that. If you want to look at the rest of the list of the people we have for upcoming guests, you can go to twit.tv/floss and linked forward from there is all of our upcoming guest list. If you want somebody on that list to be in one of our upcoming shows, and I'm not already saying, you know, contacted and waiting, email them and say, hey, you know, I listen to Floss Weekly and I'd really like you to be on the show. And then they can email me at merlin@stonehenge.com. And that's how people get right to the front of the list for that. Otherwise, I'd have to wait for them to contact me in the first place. As you may have heard a couple times, in this show, we have a live chat that goes on at live.twit.tv every time we tape. And we tape Wednesdays at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time. That's West Coast U.S. time, which does go backwards and forwards to DST. So I can't just mention as a GMT number. It doesn't work that way. If you follow us on Floss Weekly as a Twitter and Identica handle, you'll find out when we add new guests to our new list. You can also follow me, Merlin, M-E-R-L-Y-N, to find out what I'm doing. For example, if you're in Southern California, which is where I'm spending most of my time these days, on January 5th, I'm going to be giving an open talk for 2 hours on Git. Git introduction all the way through. I know a lot of people out there are listening to Git and use Git. So I'm going to be giving a two-hour talk on January 5th at, amazingly enough, at Media Temple, which I happen to be at right now. They're hosting the meeting as well. That's enough plugging for me. Simon, what's going on with you?
Well, let me see now. I'm hoping that everybody who is listening has followed me on Twitter, where I am Webmink, and is following me on webmink.com. Coming up in January, I'm going to be attending Open Source World Congress in Granada in Spain, and I would love to see anyone who's around over there. It's unlikely that I'll be at Scale in LA on the weekend of the 20th and 21st of January, but many listeners will want to be there and may well run into interesting open source folk down there. And then I'll be at FOSDEM, which is the Free and Open Source Developers European Meeting. That's happening in Brussels the weekend of the 4th of February. I would be delighted to see any listeners of yours who are at those events. If you go to my website, webmink.com, there is a contact form there. Send me a note to say you'll be at the event. And particularly at FOSDEM, I'll look forward to sharing a beer with you. That's all the plugging I've got for this week, Randall.
Very good, very good. And speaking of Scale, I won't be at Scale the first 2 days. I'm actually flying in that night from the East Coast. I'll just be getting back from one of my mini cruises, so I'm missing most of Scale for this time. But I will be around on Sunday, and I'll be there Saturday night at the hotel at 9:30 p.m. So, and I'm actually staying at the hotel, so it makes it easier. So if you happen to be going to Scale, be sure you look me up in the bar Saturday night, because I will, in fact, be there and probably in the bar. It's usually the way I get found there. That's plenty of plugging for both of us. I'm sure everybody's a little tired of hearing about us because it's all about the show. And I do hear the music coming up in the background. You know what that means. It's time to say goodbye again. And we'll see you again next time from Petaluma, the Big Petaluma Show on Floss Weekly.